on News 101.
Right here on News 101.
Right here on News 101.
What motivated you to become a candidate in the provincial election?
The media portrayal of last week's protest that resulted in polarizing images of black-clad activists taking to the streets.
He was just explaining to us the reason why they wanted to show this film on campus.
The official stance is that we are for the Olympics.
News 101 reporter Brad Pepping was there.
By discriminating against homeless people in Vancouver, there's a disproportionate impact on Aboriginal people as well as people with disabilities.
I was pretty outraged. I mean, it is outrageous.
In-depth coverage from an alternative perspective.
You're listening to News 101, Vancouver's only live, volunteer-produced, student and community newscast, offering you local, national, and international news from an alternative perspective.
What's left of us? Just a big mistake. There's nothing more for anyone to have. Here I am, here you are. Take it slow.
Today is Friday, September 24th. I'm Sam.
And I'm Eva. You're listening to News 101 on CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting to you live from unceded Musqueam territory. Here at the University of British Columbia, to our UBC campus, to the residents of Vancouver, and to listeners of our newscast and podcast on our website, citr.ca.
Good evening. It's 5:10 and time for a full hour of independent campus, local, and international news. First up, we have a report from News 101's co-director, Emily Blake, and her interview with BC Elections Canada spokesperson, Dorothy Sitek, on registering to vote for the upcoming election.
We also have our Science and Tech update with Marco, bringing you the latest news from the world of science and technology.
After that, we have our stock market update with News 101 financial reporter Alex Norman.
Lastly, we have a report from myself, News 101 correspondent Eva Yuguen-Senge. I spoke with UBC law professor William Black about Memorial University and its struggle to accommodate the needs of a hearing disabled student. But first, some headlines for today. In campus news, UBC welcomes Mohamed Fahmy, pardon and release from Egyptian prison. UBC became the subject of news this week with recently released Mohamed Fahmy, due to begin his journalist-in-residence shortly. Mohamed Fahmy was pardoned and released from Egyptian prison on Wednesday 23rd after spending nearly 2 years in prison, accused of supporting the Muslim Brotherhood and allegedly reporting false news. The former Cairo bureau chief for Al Jazeera's English network was arrested in Cairo on December 29, 2013 on terrorism-related charges, along with fellow colleagues Australian Peter Gresty and Egyptian Bahir Mohamed. Earlier this year, the journalists were sentenced to 3 years in prison, which prompted widespread condemnation by human rights organizations across the world. While their Australian colleague Peter Gresty was released and deported back in February, both Fahmy and Bahir Mohamed were only released on Wednesday, September 23rd, as they were among 100 prisoners pardoned by President Sisi on the religious celebration of Eid al-Adha. News organizations Global, City TV, and CTV soon turned their focus to UBC, where Fahmy will be taking on a position as journalist-in-residence with UBC's Global Reporting Center, as well as a W. Morris Young Center visiting fellow in applied ethics. As the journalist-in-residence with UBC's Global Reporting Center, Fahmy will mentor students in the International Reporting Program and provide guest lectures across campus. Fahmy will also offer a public lecture about his experiences as part of the Center for Applied Ethics series, Dialogues on Accountability in Ethically Responsible Institutions. UBC's School of Journalism released a statement on their website with UBC Program Director Alfred Hermida stating, quote, "As a school, we are elated at the news of Fahmy's pardon. Students are keen to hear from Fahmy about his experiences and unique perspective on the importance of freedom of expression." According to UBC's media release, an official start date has yet to be determined.
In local news, a big, tall, and fast-moving creature, too big to be a human. A huge and hairy mystery is unfolding in a small community off the coast of northern Vancouver Island. Residents from Alert Bay have reported hearing strange screams and howls by a mythical Sasquatch coming from a forest close to town. One of the residents recorded the unusual sounds and described them as very eerie. Another neighbor claimed to have heard the screams three times during the summer. The community believes it is very unlikely that this noise is coming from other wildlife, since Cormorant Island is not home to bears, cougars, or deer. The mystery has sparked the interest of renowned researcher-investigator John Blindernagel, who for decades has been looking for evidence to prove the creature's existence. With 130 recorded sightings from 1994 to 2013, BC has the highest number of Bigfoot sightings in the country, according to the Bigfoot Field Researchers Organization.
A local daycare is teaching toddlers about Indian residential schools. At Salal Daycare in Vancouver, children ages 3 to 4 are learning about the hardships faced by Aboriginals in residential schools. Kristen Weber, the caregiver, is determined to raise awareness about residential schools. Quote, "I wasn't taught about it, and I'm highly offended. We're doing these children a great disservice if we don't tell them the truth." A child educator for 20 years, Webster defends, quote, "You're never too young to learn." She reads, "When I was 8 for the children." The story is about an invulnerable Inuit girl named Olemon, who goes to residential school and eventually is taken away from her parents. The kids were asked how would they feel if it had happened to them, and despite being from different backgrounds, they agreed it would make them feel sad. During the program, the toddlers learn about Aboriginal creation stories, inspiring them to suggest carving their own totem pole. Webster doesn't want to push her particular agenda on anyone, but truly believes, quote, "Children need to know their country, where they are, and the people who live in it. It's about building community and empathy." She is now discussing about offering her residential school lesson plan at the 20 other daycares at UBC.
In national news, delegates at the Union of BC Municipalities Convention voted in favor of a resolution reaffirming their position that municipalities have authority over regulating marijuana dispensaries. The resolution states that ongoing court challenges to federal marijuana laws create uncertainty in Vancouver, the first Canadian city to approve regulation of marijuana shops. There are over 100 marijuana dispensaries in Vancouver. Marijuana dispensaries are required to pay a $30,000 licensing fee to the city and cannot be within 300 meters of schools, community centers, or each other. Carissa Bell, a Maple Ridge councillor and president of the Lower Mainland Local Government Association, said, quote, "This rapid growth of unregulated businesses poses a significant risk to our youth, public health, and has an impact on our local economy. If, however, they are carefully managed and regulated, these businesses can play a role in improving the health conditions that affect numerous people." Some councillors voted against the resolution, stating the regulation of medical marijuana was the federal government's responsibility.
The Trans-Pacific Partnership, or TPP, is a trade agreement between 12 Pacific Rim countries, including Canada. The TPP has attracted criticism for both its secrecy and the ISDS clause. The ISDS clause or investor state dispute settlement is a clause that would allow companies to take countries to international court over laws that cause lost profits. Conservatives want to conclude the deal before the October 19th election and cast it as a win for consumers. Efforts to close the deal could lead to fast offers on the part of the Canadian government, could seriously disrupt the supply-managed dairy industry. CBC learned that Canada is prepared to offer up significant shares of its dairy market. The reason for opening Canadian dairy markets to American dairy producers is to compensate American producers for opening their markets to New Zealand dairy producers.
In international news, the internet has been running wild amid rumors of British Prime Minister David Cameron's alleged misconduct involving a dead pig. Last week, British tabloid The Daily Mail published an excerpt from Call Me Dave, an unauthorized biography of David Cameron, written by Michael Ashcroft and Isabel Oakeshott. The excerpt focuses on Cameron's time at Oxford University in the 1980s. Among allegations of drug use, the piece outlines Cameron's joining the notorious Piers Gaveston Society. In an initiation ritual of the society involving a dead pig, the prime minister is accused of having, quote, "inserted a private part of his anatomy into the animal's mouth." Ashcroft's source, who remains unnamed, claims to have seen a picture of the act. Following the article's publishing, the hashtag Piggate spread across the internet, causing a range of responses, from discussions of class in British society to lighthearted memes. The rumor, which remains unsubstantiated, has been dismissed by Conservative Party sources, reports The Guardian, but has been met with no official response from the Prime Minister. Also noted by The Guardian was the rumor that this story was spread by Lord Ashcroft to get back at Cameron for passing him over for a government position.
Those are your campus, local, national, and international headlines on News 101. We're going to take a quick PSA break, but stay tuned.
tired of listening to the same music day in and day out and want to try something a little different? Well then, how about listening to Asian music? Now, I don't mean it like
Oppan Gangnam Style.
Gangnam Style. Nor like
She bangs, she bangs. Oh baby, but she moves, she moves.
I'm talking about a little more like and a little more like and also a little more like and definitely something like so tune in to Asian Wave 101, playing you the best of Chinese and Korean pop, Wednesdays from 4 p.m. to 5 p.m., only on CITR 101.9 FM in
Vancouver. On Saturday, September 26th, Seattle indie rock band Chastity Belt are playing at the Biltmore Cabaret with guests Le Chaussette and Strange Wilds. Chastity Belt is on tour to support their new album, Time to Go Home, on Harley Art Records. This is an early show. Doors at 7 p.m., curfew at 11 p.m. Tickets are $12 in advance and available online at ticketweb.ca. Tickets are also available at Red Cat Records and Zulu Records. Sponsored by CITR.
When you join Blue.
Welcome back to News 101. You're listening to us on CITR 101.9 FM or online at CITR.ca. Broadcasting live from unceded Musqueam territory here at the University of British Columbia in Vancouver. Thank you for being with us.
Up next, we have News 101's co-director, Emily Blake, and her interview with BC Elections Canada spokesperson, Dorothy Sitek, on registering to vote for the upcoming election.
First time that they are voting outside of their home riding. For me, this is my first year voting outside of Ontario, and I wasn't sure what my options were. I'm sure many other students had the same questions, so I spoke to Dorothy Sitek from Elections Canada to find out.
How can students or anyone register to vote for the election?
So you must register to vote for the election, and there are a number of options you have. One is you can go online, and that's at the Elections Canada website, which is elections.ca. There is a tool on the website where if you're a first-time voter, you can put all of your information in, and it will confirm that you have correctly entered all of your information, and you will be sent a hard copy of the voter information card to your home. And the other option is you can register by going to your local returning office or your Elections Canada office. There is an office in every single riding in British Columbia, all 42, and they are open 7 days a week now. And you can find your local returning office by going onto the same site, and there is a voter information service tool where all you need to do is you need to put in your postal code, and up pops a page where you get all of the information for your returning office.
For students that are from out of the province or, you know, living in Vancouver, they're far away from where they're originally from, how can they vote?
So you have to register. And in order to register, you have to choose where you consider your home to be. So if you're living in residence, for instance, and that you consider to be your home, and that's where you want to vote, that is where you will register, and that's the address you will use. If, for instance, you are on campus and you're living temporarily on campus, but you consider your parents' home, and your parents' home is out of province, and that's where you want to vote, then that's the address that you would use in order to register to vote. So the important thing is that where you register generates the poll location. And unlike in the provincial election where you can vote at any poll you choose, in the federal election you must report to the poll you've been assigned to. If you register and decide that your home is really where your parents are, and let's say your parents are in Ontario, then that's the address you will register under. And you will be given a polling address in your parents' riding. So it would mean that you would either have to travel to Ontario on advance polling days or on election day in order to vote, or the other option is to vote by special ballot.
Could you expand on the special ballot option?
So special ballot, in fact, you could vote by special ballot today. You can go to your returning office and request to vote by special ballot, at which point you are handed a package and you fill out all the information. And the only thing you need to know about special ballot voting, two things. One is you need to know which candidate you're voting for, because unlike at a polling station where you are presented with a printed ballot and the whole list of candidates is included and you just place an X beside the name that you're voting for, in a special ballot you actually have to write the name of the candidate for whom you are voting. And the second thing about special ballots is that they must arrive at Elections Canada on October the 19th by 6 p.m. So if you're returning your special ballot to the returning office locally, then it's 6 p.m. local time. If you're sending it to Ottawa, it's 6 p.m. Ottawa time.
What type of ID do people need to bring when they go to vote?
So there are a variety of options. The first option is a government-issued ID that has your photo, your name, and your current address on it. So 86% of people vote with their driver's license in Canada. Or you can vote, for instance, using your provincial ID card, as long as the information on there is current. If you don't have a driver's license that you can use, the second option is you bring two pieces of ID, both of which have your name, but the second also has your current address. So let's say you're living in a dorm and you have a student ID card that you could use. So your second piece could be something like a bank statement that you receive at the dorm addressed to you. It could be a personal check or a utility bill or your phone bill, any one of those items. There are 36 options to choose from in terms of ID. And the best thing I can say is to prepare in advance, is take a moment, register ahead of time so that you get your voter information card in the mail. You have that. You know exactly where you need to go on election day or during the advance polls. And you can also plan for which forms of ID that you have that meet the criteria. Now, there is another option, actually. So, for instance, if you're a student living in a dorm and you do not have anything that is sent to you from an authority that has your address on it, you can go to your dorm administrator and ask that person to download what is called a letter of confirmation of residence. And that's available on the Elections Canada website under voter ID. Your dorm administrator will fill that form out for you, and they need to sign it. And it is that form letter that you can use as your second piece of ID.
Is there anything else that you recommend that people do before they vote?
The one thing people might not know about is the reason it's really great to do the voter registration is that if you bring the voter information card with you, which we highly recommend, you can get fast-tracked. So even on high-volume days, you will get processed more quickly than you would otherwise. And so the voter information card provides you with really important information, the location and time of opening of the polls, so the duration of the polls on election day, so October the 19th, polls will be open for 12 hours. On advance polling days, which are on Thanksgiving long weekend this year, and we're for the first time open for 4 days. There's an extra day. So on Thanksgiving long weekend, you can vote from Friday, October the 9th, straight through to the Monday from noon to 8 p.m. And your voter information card will have the polling location and number for advanced polling as well. And they're not necessarily the same. But you can also check online.
Well, thank you very much.
Oh, my pleasure, Emily. Thank you.
If you're having difficulty registering or have any other questions about voting, you can call Elections Canada at 1-800-463-6868 or visit your local returning office.
Thank you, Emily. We're going to take a quick PSA break, but stay tuned for more contributor segments here on CITR 101.9 FM.
When you join Balloon Club, we guarantee that you will be able to make a balloon poodle within the first day.
Here at the UBC Ant Club, we just like to talk about ants and compare ant farms. It's really cool.
Paperclip Club is all about, well, paperclips mostly.
At Blah Club, you can blah blah, blah 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 blah.
Explosion!
There's only one club worth joining at UBC, and that's CITR 101.9 FM. We got free tickets to shows, whirly pops, professional help in all types of audio engineering, passes to festivals, crazy parties, live band swag. All types of crazy people. Our programming manager rides a motorcycle. There's freestyle rapping, Nardwar the Human Serviette, the vinyl and record libraries, Discorder magazine, free studio recording, and it sure beats the hell out of Paperclip Club, which is a thing that I just made up because I work at
CITR.
So come check us out on the top floor of the Student Union building. We got all types of crazy shit for you to do. Or check us out online at www.citr.ca.
There's still time to apply to Shindig 2015. Compete in CITR's very own Battle of the Bands. Be a part of Shindig history and join past contestants like Japan Droids, Bond of Tigers, the Pack AD, Mystery Machine, and the Organ. Win studio time and track mastering, showcases at North by Northeast, Canadian Music Week, and Music Waste, and much more. All genres welcome. All we need is a three-song demo and your contact info. Please email all submissions to shindig.submissions@gmail.com by midnight on Monday, September 28th. Be a part of Shindig 31.
Welcome back to News 101. You are listening to us on CITR 101.9 FM or online at citr.ca, broadcasting live from unceded Musqueam territory here at the University of British Columbia in Vancouver. Thank you for being with us.
It's now time for our science and tech update with Marco. Take it away, Marco.
Good afternoon. Today we have stories with Volkswagen in trouble, something about brain tuning, bees, HIV cures, and Aboriginal story from here in BC. But our first story is Volkswagen Canada halts some sales as emission rigging scandal deepens. Volkswagen Canada has stopped sales of many of its diesel models following revelations last week that Volkswagen has rigged emission tests for almost 500,000 diesel cars in the U.S. And so says company spokesman Tom Tetzlaff in Canada. Volkswagen Canada has issued a stop sales order to our dealers for all the affected vehicles pending resolution of the matter. The stop order echoed a similar order in the U.S. 3 days after the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency revealed that 500,000 diesel-powered Volkswagen cars had been programmed by bypass emission controls, except during emissions test. So says the company spokesman, a sophisticated software algorithm on certain Volkswagen vehicles detects when the car is undergoing official emissions testing and turns off full emission controls on only during the test. The models in Canada affected are the VW Jetta, Golf, Beetle, Passat, and Golf Wagon. Diesel-powered models account for 22% of VW Canada's sale. The EPA and Environment Canada both stress that the effectiveness of the vehicle pollutant control devices is not a safety issue, but just a threat to public health. Philip Edmondson, an automotive consumer advocate who authors the annual Lemon Report, said he was surprised by the Volkswagen news. Up to now, VW has been a pretty upstanding company. He says diesel engines are hard to clean up, so that was why Volkswagen probably did it. Volkswagen has lost a lot on its stocks in the past week. Says Martin Winterkorn from Germany, I am personally deeply sorry that we have broken the trust of our customers. VW has marketed its diesel-powered cars as being better for the environment. So the EPA said the VW cars under investigation passed emissions tests because they turned on the testing mechanism only during the test, and they were actually emitting up to 40 times the national standard for nitrogen oxide. Consumer Reports announced it would remove its recommended rating for the Jetta and Passat. VW has recalled 500,000 cars in the U.S., and it's still to be determined how many cars will be recalled in Canada. In our next story, titled Brain Cells Get Tweaked on the Go. Researchers from the MRC Center for Developmental Neurobiology at the Institute of Psychiatry, Psychology, and Neuroscience in King's College London have discovered a new molecular switch that controls the properties of neurons in the brain. The findings suggest that our hardware in the brain is tunable, with implications that go far beyond neuroscience to cure such diseases as epilepsy. Computers are often used as metaphors for the brain, with logic boards and microprocessors representing the neural circuits and neuron. While this analogy has served neuroscience as well up to now, it is far from correct. So say the researchers from King's College. They suggest that the brain is highly dynamical, it's self-organizing, and it is a system in which internal and external influences continually shape information processing. Researchers from King's College said discovering that some of the neurons in the cerebral cortex can adapt their properties in response to changes in network activity, such as those observed during learning of a motor task, mean that our hardware is tunable, at least to some extent. So any kids listening to this, if you misbehave, your parents can tune your brain, so you better watch it. Professor Oscar Martin from the center said, our study demonstrates the tremendous plasticity of the brain and how this relates to fundamental processes such as learning. Understanding the mechanisms that regulate this plasticity go far beyond neuroscience, from educational policy to therapy for neurological disorders. Sorry, something just dropped. Thank you. In our next story, researcher in Australia have discovered four new species of bees. The species were discovered by evaluating DNA barcoding and morphologically comparing the bees with museum species. Three of the species discovered belong to the group of bees that feed on the flowers of the emu bushes. These bushes, growing in the Australian mainland, are defined by narrow tube-like flowers. These three species have adapted themselves to be able to feed on these flowers, which, according to the scientists, is a great example of co-evolution. Dr. Hogendorm, lead author of the study, said these bees have narrow faces and very long mouths to collect the nectar through a narrow constriction at the base of the emu bush. The fourth species has a round-shaped head. This story is very important because Europe is now experiencing a huge decline in bees, and the same is happening in the United States. In local news, researchers have discovered tools that belong to BC First Nations probably 12,000 years ago. These BC First Nations had stone tools, and it was once believed that they would have to travel long distance to find the prized volcanic rock for these tools. But a new study of an ancient village suggests the mountain actually came to them. Archaeologist Colin Greer has been studying the Gulf Island village site at Dionysio Point on Galilano Island for two decades. And until his team picked up a few dark stones on the beach, they began questioning the theory of traveling for stones to make tools. The associate professor at Washington State University Anthropology Department said the team tested the beach stones, the debris from stone tool making at the site, and the volcanic rock from Mount Garibaldi over 100 kilometers away on BC's mainland. The chemical fingerprint matched. Greer said the finding dispels the theory that the villagers went all the way to Mount Garibaldi thousands of years ago to get the stone for their tools. Instead, the rock came to their beach thousands of years before. It was picked right off the local beach, brought there by glaciers, conveniently 12,000 years ago. The finding is shown in the September issue of the Journal of Archaeological Science. It said the volcanic rock was difficult to fashion in a tool, but it kept a better edge and required less retouching. Greer said the beach stones made it much more possible for the villagers to be self-sufficient because the material for tools was easily accessible. In another story, new drug proves successful in undercovering hidden HIV cells. Researchers have successfully tested a new drug that activates hidden reservoirs of HIV cells in individuals on an antiretroviral therapy, one of the first steps to eradicating the virus and eventually finding a cure. The study, led by Dr. Ole Sogard from Aarhus University in Denmark, found that the drug did not negatively affect the function of killer T cells, essential for the elimination of HIV-infected cells by the immune system. A cure for HIV requires the eradication of latent, dormant, and therefore hidden virus from reservoirs in immune cells throughout the body. HIV latency depends on the activity of proteins from the human host called histone deacetylase. The study tested a single HDACI romidepsin on six Caucasian participants with a median age of 56 and a median time on antiretroviral therapy of 10 years. When the researchers analyzed blood samples from the participant, they saw evidence of HIV transcription, the first step of latency reversal, which is the important part in this test. And they saw it in all participants. In the second infusion, HIV RNA, which is the genetic material of HIV, was detectable in the blood plasma in five of the six participants. Dr. Ken Kolsch and PhD candidate William Hay Cunningham said this is an important study and essentially lays the groundwork for future studies that will investigate this approach in combination with other interventions. It is worth pointing out, or so said the doctor, that we are still very far from an effective cure for HIV, and until then, patients will need to be treated with antiretroviral drug. Aarhus University research acknowledged the study did not reveal how many infected cells were kicked out in the participant and that no substantial changes in the size of the HIV reservoir were observed. However, they suggest the results establish a new benchmark for future trials. This is Marco. You've been listening to the Science and Tech Report.
Thank you, Marco. We're going to take a quick PSA break, but stay tuned for more News 101 on CITR 101.9 FM and online at citr.ca.
The Vancouver International Film Festival will once again welcome some of the world's finest films to one of the most beautiful cities on the planet. From September 24th to October 9th, the 34th annual VIFF will present over 300 films from 70 countries to 9 Vancouver screens. Visit the Vancouver International Film Festival online at viff.org.
Everything changed. Everything changed. I knew this day would come.
From September 10th to October 2nd, the Mobile Art Tin Can Studio will travel to four sites and set up mixed media collage workshops. Participants will have the opportunity to explore election issues while engaging in a creative, tactile activity. The workshops are free, all supplies are provided, and no technical skills are necessary to participate. Go to creativepublics.ca for more details.
You're listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.
Welcome back to News 101. I'm Eva.
And I'm Sam. You're listening to us on CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting live from unceded Musqueam territory here at the University of British Columbia in Vancouver, or online at citr.ca. Thank you for being with us.
Next up, we have Alex Norman's weekly financial update.
This is the weekly financial update report with Alex Norman, keeping you updated with what's going on in the markets. These are today's top stories. The U.S. Federal Reserve hints that there may be a rate liftoff before the end of the year.
The Fed's Janet Yellen gets medical attention after struggling with her speech. Volkswagen is in troubled waters over cheating diesel emission testings. Google faces renewed U.S. antitrust scrutiny, this time over Android. And Nike is the big winner today as the stock rises on positive earning releases. While giving a speech at the University of Massachusetts, the U.S. Federal Reserve Chair Janet Yellen hinted that there may be a rate hike in the key interest rate likely to occur this December. Rising growth in the U.S. domestic product, a strong U.S. dollar, and the fear of rising inflation were all cited as reasons to support a rate hike in December. Critics who argue against the December rate hike suggest that it could lead to disinflation, calling prices to fall, further depressing the general economy. The Fed speech was cut short last night, as the Fed Chair Janet Yellen needed to receive medical attention after coughing, pausing, and struggling to finish her speech. The 69-year-old Fed chief, who had been speaking for nearly an hour before a packed university, appeared to lose her place in reading her last few lines and had to abruptly stop, ending the speech. An official statement was released stating that Ms. Yellen was suffering from dehydration and was fine from a medical standpoint. An ongoing controversy around Volkswagen's emissions scandal has shocked the financial world, with its CEO, Martin Winterhoek, announcing his retirement on Wednesday. The German automaker is facing accusations of cheating after it was revealed that it used software to manipulate its emission numbers, favoring the diesel-powered engines. Volkswagen's stock value has declined to an all-time low after news was released that they may face penalties of up to $18 billion levied by the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. The stock is closed down 4.3% today. The Federal Trade Commission is looking into complaints that Google Inc. has used its Android operating system for its smartphones to favor searches and services at the expense of its rivals. Complaints that Google Research, Maps, and other Google products have been given prominence has sparked the investigation. Nike is a big winner today as the stock closed up 8.89%. This is on the back of yesterday's positive earnings release for its first quarter. On Thursday evening, the giant apparel reported adjusted earnings per share of $1.34. This is up 23% since last quarter. Analysts point to strong sales in China as being a major contributor to yesterday's positive earnings release, with sales growth increasing by 30% over the last 3 months. In other market news, Toronto's S&P TSX Composite Index rose 0.3% to close at 13,378 points. The Dow Jones Industrial Average closed on an up note, rising 0.7% to close at 16,314 points. The broader S&P 500 index stayed relatively flat today, posting a loss of 0.5, closing at 1,931 points. In the Asian indices, the markets ended mixed as the Japanese Nikkei closed on an up note, posting gains of 1.1%, while the Shanghai Composite lost 1.6%. The European markets closed on a higher note across the board, with the German DAX up 2.77%, while in the UK, stock markets gained 2.47% to close at 6,109 points. Turning to the commodities market, the December gold futures closed down 0.68% to $1,145 per ounce, while the October crude futures were up 0.47% to close at $46.17 per barrel. In natural gas, October future contracts were down 3% to close at $2.55. In the bond market, there's been no change in yield, with the Canadian 10-year Treasury being left at 1.5%. The same with the U.S. 10-year Treasury, with yields at 2.16%. This has been the Weekly Financial Update Report with Alex Norman, keeping you updated with what's going on in the markets.
Thanks, Alex. We're going to take a quick PSA break, but stay tuned for more News 101 on CITR 101.9 FM.
Toronto-based psychedelic pop band Grounders will be at the Media Club on September 22nd in support of their debut self-titled LP. With help from members of Broken Social Scene and Absolutely Free, this hazy album is as addictive as the Beach Boys, experimental in its complexity, and begging to be heard live.
The Study and Go Abroad Fair is back on Tuesday, October 6th. Meet face-to-face with top universities from around the world and start planning to travel. Learn about degrees in law, medicine, health sciences, arts, technology, pharmacy, business, hotel management, and much more. Check out our travel zone for volunteering, language programs, adventure travel, and work abroad. For more info, visit studyandgoabroad.com. Free admission.
Our last segment for today is Eva's report on Memorial University and the challenges that universities face when trying to accommodate a diverse student body and faculty. William Sears, a hearing disabled student at Memorial University in Newfoundland, made headlines when his professor, Dr. Rani Punjabi, refused to wear an FM translator that he needs in order to hear her lectures. Dr. Punjabi says that she will not wear the transmitter due to religious reasons. Eva spoke to Professor William Black, who specializes in constitutional law and human rights at the Allard School of Law, to get to the legal ramifications of this case.
Human rights towards accessibility, like what rights in this case would the student be entitled to?
I think all students are entitled to the services of the university, which is, of course, education. So all students are entitled to that, and if accommodation is required, if you have to make some special measures to provide that service, then the university has an obligation to do that. A major case along those lines was actually against UBC quite a few years ago, where a student said, "I want a signing interpreter," and it was held that he had a right to that.
All right, so which organizations are responsible for overseeing these cases? And
in most jurisdictions, there are human rights commissions and tribunals. In BC, there's just a tribunal, but it's an official governmental agency.
Okay, so how would these human rights towards accessibility conflict with then the professor's right to religious freedom? She's saying that she can't wear the device for religious reasons.
Right, and the university also has an obligation to try to accommodate her, but they only have to do so if the claim is well-founded and sincere. In other words, if somebody takes a religious claim that they've never asserted before, it's going to be probably pretty hard to say it's sincere.
Okay. Would that require her or someone to then get a statement from a representative of that religion to back up her claim, or?
Wouldn't necessarily require that, but that, if I were advising her, I'd say that's a good idea. Because it has to be a significant interference mm-hmm. with your freedom of religion to say that you have to do this, or you're allowed not to do this. Also, in any event, the university has a duty to provide the student with the service. So it might have an obligation to have a second teacher teach that, too.
So the professor is also saying that there was a case, a similar case against her in 1996, and at that time a deal was made between her and the university whereby she couldn't be enforced to wear such devices. How would that then play into this situation?
Well, if it was a settlement, it sounds like it was a settlement, it wouldn't make law one way or the other.
Okay.
It does, I guess, tend to prove that she's held this belief for a long time,
mm-hmm.
That she just didn't invent it when this student showed up. So in that way, it favors her, but I don't think it would change the law that obliges the university to assist the student.
So what does that mean for the student William Sears' case with the Newfoundland and Labrador Human Rights Commission?
I think we need to know more facts to know how that would come out. First, we need to know the basis of her religious claim. He basically has a clear claim. Then we have to weigh that against her claim that they can't violate her freedom of religion. We'd have to know what's the basis for her claim. Is this a serious interference? Is it a matter that's up for interpretation? Or is it pretty well settled in Hindi religious principles that this would happen? I suspect it may involve a degree of interpretation because obviously these devices have only existed for decades, mm-hmm. not centuries. So.
Right. Dr. Panjabi is now saying that her professional and personal reputation has been damaged by the media attention. Is there a potential for her to also seek legal action?
I don't know what legal action she would have. There's no defamation, I don't think.
No.
I mean, she admits that what the student said is true. She just
could she then could she come after the university for not anticipating this conflict, this situation, knowing that they had this deal in place with her and knowing that there was a hearing disabled student registered for this class and not, you know, approaching him and providing accommodation before it came to this?
I suspect that she'd have some difficulty making that kind of claim.
That's our program for today, September 25th. Today's newscast was brought to you by volunteer efforts. If you'd like to share your comments, get involved, or give us an important news tip, contact us through our email, news@citr.ca. You can subscribe to our podcast and listen to our latest interviews and segments on our website, citr.ca/news. For more independent news, join us next Friday at 5 p.m. for another edition of News 101. I'm Eva.
And I'm Sam. Today's broadcast was produced by Rohit Joseph. From the entire news team at CITR, thank you for listening. Stay tuned for Stranded right here on CITR 101.9 FM. To close off the show, we have Olga by The Oz from their latest album, Names, now topping the CITR charts.